if we're being honest, like the training that takes you to run a really good 10K is probably not super, super, super different to a training that could, you would imagine, take you to running a really good half. But maybe you could break down kind of like what a week of training looks like and how, you know, Amazfit helps you along the way.
Yeah, so...
Dear Grant,
right,
it's
now,
me again.
I'm kind of doing...
I always knew you were fast, but I didn't think you'd outrun us this quickly. While we were busy counting your records, you were busy building a life we only saw in the mileage.
And now I'm running like 105 to 115 with less intensity, but the volume is up. New distance. I've never really raced on the roads before, so a lot of new stuff.
A blank slate on the roads and a new chapter at home. You are stepping into the unknown. Double the distance, double the stakes. Keeping a closer eye on your heart than ever before.
I've been using heart rate data a lot more now, just because that's continuous and I can see in the middle of a rep. The armband that Amazfit makes is really nice. It's like way less invasive than a chest strap. You can see when you're fatigued.
While you were monitoring your heart, I was busy protecting mine. We even had a little thing here, a Grant's Girls bit that you were completely oblivious to.
We had a fun little recurring segment a couple of years ago called Grant's Girls, which you may or may not be aware of. It's like a rose, and then it says GG above it, which is stands for Grant's Girls.
I did not know that.
No, Grant, you didn't. But as it turns out, the only Grant's Girl that ever really mattered was the one waiting for you at the finish line.
Hi, Grant. So it's only right, since you're on the Coffee Club pod, that you should explain what is a cafecito and how do you make it?
For anyone who didn't know, that question was from the Grant's girl, Grant's fiance.
Congrats for wrapping that segment up by actually getting engaged.
Yeah, we didn't report on that.
Congratulations on the win, Grant. In running and in love. Love, Grant's girl. Find out more on the Coffee Club pod.
Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie, Morgan, George, and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 220. Big number, a nice number, a good number to announce something very exciting, which is that today we are beginning a little sponsorship with a brand called Amazfit that we're very excited to work with. And over the next couple of months, we're going to be talking a lot about it. But first off, we're so happy that they have agreed to let us have... I was going to say forced, but I don't know if that's a good word to use. But in order to celebrate this partnership, we are today having on the show one of their star athletes, someone that we've wanted to have on the show for a very long time, but have not yet, Mr.
Pretty much the sponsorship's just been trying to get this one athlete on the podcast. So
everything has led to this moment. Thank you, Gus, for setting this up. Today we have an interview with the one and only Mr. Grant Fisher. So, yeah, without further ado, thank you to Amazfit for hooking this up. And yeah, we hope that you guys enjoy the lovely interview with Grant. Well, look what we got here. We've finally caught the big fish. Mr. Grant Fisher is joining us today. First off, well, we're so excited to have you on, Grant. But first off, how you doing, man? How you feeling since Milrose?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling much better than I did while I was at Milrose. I got a little sick and... took me a while to feel normal again, but feeling good, been training well, and haven't been sick since. So I think something was going around either at a New Balance Grand Prix the week before or at Milrose, and maybe I was a contributing factor to some sickness too for other people. But dude, I ended up with pneumonia. I got like a chest x-ray and stuff, and there was a bunch of fluid in my lungs. Like I was just coughing like crazy, but good now.
Who are you laying the blame on at New Balance?
I don't know, because some people pulled out of New Balance. I think it was just a combination of just like that time of the year, people are getting sick, and it was also just 0 degrees outside. And I was running outside quite a bit, not on the treadmills, which maybe was a mistake. And dude, I got hit hard. But yeah, I'm not pointing fingers.
He's not into that. He's above that. Where have you been spending your time recently training? We know that you're just in Flagstaff now. We know that sometimes you go to Phoenix for training camp during the winter months of the year, and you obviously live in Utah. Where have you actually been training for, you know, this kind of big training block leading into these races?
Yeah, so every winter I leave Park City because there's usually too much snow, and I go to Flagstaff where there's usually less snow. But this year there's been like no snow in the West at all. So I probably could have stayed in Park City the whole time. I'll drop down to Phoenix like for a workout. But this whole time I've just stayed up in Flagstaff, and, weather's been really good. I mean, we've had a handful of days where it snowed, but, hardly anything significant. So I'll stay up here until, New York City half. And then after that, I'll go back home to Utah.
Was your plan always just to run? Well, I guess the plan was to do two indoor races and then ended up just being one. That was the plan all along?
The plan was actually to do three. So the plan was to do New Balance Indoor Grand Prix. That was going to be a 2K. Milrose was going to be a week later, a 2 mile. And then 2 weeks after that, I was either going to do the Valentine meet at BU and run a 5K or go to the JDL meet that same weekend and run a 5K. But after I got sick, I was just like, I was kind of still sick, like leading into that, February 14th weekend. So it was just not in the cards at all. So I ended up just having a one race indoor season, which is kind of lame, but, still got more stuff to do. Yeah.
I mean, considering that you have this big looming race of the New York Half Marathon, which is not far away at all, that's very impressive that you did still want to take on such an indoor season and like really cool. I mean, and I'd love to dive into kind of how you go about structuring your training when you have these different races in mind. And we have to give a massive shout out to Amazfit for putting this all together. Obviously, they've sponsoring you now along with many other athletes. And we're going to have a recurring segment in the coming weeks of like kind of our Amazfit training talk. And what better way to get it started than today with Grant? He's talking about his training going into a half marathon. And we know how much people love talking about training, specifically for the roads. But yeah, what has the build-up looked like, taking into account that you were going to do this big race, the half marathon, the New York half marathon, but then also try and do these much shorter races? I mean, you dropped all the way down to a 2K at New Balance and you ran pretty much the world record, just a couple points of a second away from it technically, I guess. But what does your training look like in order to enable you to take on this schedule?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an ideal schedule. Like if I were mapping out the year perfectly, I'd do an indoor season, then I'd probably have like a good 2 month build to a half marathon. But you know, there's so many things in the schedule that I want to do. It's so hard to like carve stuff out. So, especially after deciding not to race that, that February 14th weekend, that BU and JDL meet, it gave me like 5-6 weeks build to this half marathon, which is pretty good. The main difference is just like cutting out, you know, 1500 or 5K, 3K specific sessions where I'm running, you know, Ks at 5K pace really hard, or like quarters at 1500 pace really hard, like completely eliminating those and replacing them with just longer efforts of like, you know, mile repeats, 2 mile repeats, a harder long run. Just more volume in general. And honestly, it's kind of a nice transition. Like it kind of just feels like fall training. I feel like most people train similarly in the fall where you're kind of just doing threshold hills, long run, easy runs. You know, there's nothing really special there. I'm just doing a little more volume than I'm used to. And it's fun. It's nice to have something different to go for. And especially because I've never run a half before, it's kind of like blank slate. New challenge. And yeah, the training, like I would say leading into that 2K, I was probably running about 90-ish miles a week. And now I'm running like 105 to 115 with less intensity, but the volume is up. So yeah, it's been fun. New challenge and new things to consider, new distance. I've never really raced on the roads before, so a lot of new stuff.
It's going to be a good race.
You feel like it's the volume that's going to give you the confidence pre-race day, Or is there going to be like a particular session that you do, and then you're like, all right, I can run a half marathon? Or you think it's just like, what's going to make that difference, you think?
Dude, it's tough because, like, you know, I've had builds to 5Ks so many times at this point that, you know, I know the indicator workouts and I know like roughly how I'm going to run leading into it based on how my training is. For this one, I just like, I'm kind of going in blind. You know, even if I run a good, like, you know, indicator workout, like, I don't entirely know how that translates to an hour of running yet.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a combination. Like, I'm happy that my body can handle this type of volume. But at the same time, like, the longest I've ever raced is like 30 minutes. So this is double that length. And I've always raced on tracks. So, like, judging the hills and wind and, you know, different turns and stuff, like, I don't know, man, I'm kind of going in blind. It's really going to be hard to like predict how I'm going to do, I think. Like, I have confidence that I'm going to do well, but I just have no idea going into this thing.
Yeah, it is a bit of a tough one because there's so many factors that you just mentioned. Because it is, you're completely correct. There's not only the distance difference, it is also a whole new terrain with the roads and just the style that those races are and the elements that you kind of face. And you are going to be racing a lot of guys who that's their bread and butter. So I think it's a great place to go do it, to debut for it, because you know that you're going to have a quality field. You know that you're going to have a lot of other athletes that you really don't have to overthink it. All you have to worry about is just actually racing these guys. And that's going to take you to a really, really solid result in the end. Maybe we could go through specifically, you could break down a little bit of what your training week looks like, just kind of day to day. Nothing, it doesn't have to be too specific, but is it still kind of like the two session days a week that you do in order to hit those miles, or have you changed that up a bit? Because we know that from following you that historically you've loved a big solid long run. So you've already been doing, I mean, if we're being honest, like the training that takes you to run a really good 10K is probably not super, super, super different to a training that could, you would imagine, take you to running a really good half. But maybe you could break down kind of like what a week of training looks like and how, you know, Amazfit helps you along the way.
Yeah. So right now I'm kind of doing alternating weeks of two workouts in a long run and three workouts in a long run. So I'll kind of give like an average week of those two. So usually Monday I'll do a double easy run. So that'll total up to like 12 or 15 miles on the day, just of easy running, and maybe a little gym work on that day. Tuesday would be a very traditional, like, double threshold day. Normally in the track season, I would do something like 6 times a mile, or yeah, 3 times 2 mile or something that would total to 6 miles of threshold work. Now I'll push that to about 8 miles of threshold work in the morning, and then another 6 miles of threshold work in the afternoon. So those days, like, it doesn't sound like much, 2 extra miles of threshold, but it really adds up, and it's hard to get that effort right. In doing that, like, I don't know how in the weeds you want me to get here, but I often use lactate to guide a lot of my training. But the trouble with lactate, as you guys know, is you have to stop and, you know, prick your finger or prick your ear or something and get a blood sample. So it's not very useful in the middle of a rep. You can kind of just figure out afterwards if you hit the right effort or not. So I've been using heart rate data a lot more now, just because that's continuous and I can see in the middle of a rep if my heart rate's getting too high. And a lot of these threshold days I'm doing on the roads now, whereas I normally would do them on a track or on a treadmill. And, you know, you can see pretty acutely, like, when you're going up a hill, that your heart rate is spiking. I've been trying to work on like in race nutrition lately, and drinking from a bottle is tough when you're running like 4:35 pace or 4:45 pace. It's a lot harder than I thought. So I'm trying to monitor the heart rate, make sure that when I'm drinking from these bottles or taking a gel, my heart rate isn't going crazy. And same thing going up and down hills, like trying to smooth that out as much as possible. And heart rate kind of allows me to get instantaneous feedback rather than waiting for the lactate reading afterwards. So those are Tuesdays. Usually on a Wednesday, I'll have two easy runs again, totaling about 15 miles. If I'm feeling really tired, I'll total it to 12. The next day, I'll probably do another double threshold day. So 6 to 8 miles of threshold in the morning, another 6 in the afternoon, ideally on the roads again. Then, what is that, Thursday? So Friday would be easy, Saturday would be easy, and Sunday would be a long run. I've bumped my long run up to about 20 miles now, and I like doing kind of some pickups within it, especially towards the end. So maybe the first 15 miles at kind of a steady, hard pace, like 5:45 pace-ish, and then the last 5 at something like 5 flat pace, just to get a more continuous effort. And that's another spot where heart rate is nice, because, you know, if I do a 5 mile tempo and then prick my finger at the end and check the lactate and it's not even close to what I want, you know, there's no really going back to adjust. But if I'm checking heart rate throughout, which the armband that Amazfit makes is really nice. It's like way less invasive than a chest strap. So you can kind of get that instantaneous feedback throughout it. And the other nice thing about it is you can see when you're fatigued. If you've monitored the heart rate over and over and over, you can see days where like you're working really hard, but your heart rate's just not getting up. Good indicator that you're just a little fatigued and need to take it easy for a day or two. So yeah, that'll total up to about, depending on the week, 100 to 115 miles. And it doesn't feel as hard on my body as 90 miles a week with like 1500 and 5K work. It feels like lighter on my body overall, which is kind of weird. But that intensity just really adds up on you.
Yeah, that's kind of the same feedback we got from Clicker and those guys shifting from adding 20 more miles but taking out the intensity, and it actually makes it like very doable.
Your body does feel better, but then you do have like this kind of more creeping fatigue, which Grant kind of mentioned, with like those days where like your heart rate is just like not going up as high. That's definitely how I felt in it, which is something I guess, yeah. I think it feels nicer though. You feel like you're not on the verge of breaking really. You just feel really tired all the time.
So are you just living on Lake Mary? Like where are these road show stations happening?
Sometimes on Lake Mary, yeah. And then sometimes down in Camp Verde. Camp Verde is nice because it's like a little over 3,000 feet, and you know, you can do more continuous efforts without just like going way over the edge. Like if I tried to do a 5 mile tempo on Lake Mary and tried to keep my heart rate and lactate kind of stable, I just have to break it up, or I'd have to like progressively go slower to maintain that heart rate or lactate.
Yeah.
Just because you're at 7,000 feet. But at 3,000 feet, I can maintain it a lot better and kind of get the right effort and repeat it over and over and over. So those are my two spots I've been using for kind of road work. When it snows, Camp Verde is nice too, because there's way less snow there, usually no snow. But yeah, it's different. I mean, I agree with what Klecker said. Like, it feels like, you know, obviously this isn't an exact science, but for every mile of like 5K intensity or 1500 intensity you give, like, I feel like the trade-off is like 10 miles of just easy volume.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how much more like abrasive on your body that is.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, at the end of the day, though, the training that you're doing is very, very impressive. Like, that sounds like a very, very solid training week. It's nothing to scoff at. But obviously, you've built up your training capacity over so many years now, and you've been able to, I mean, it's really cool for you because you've been able to experience quite a few different training environments now as well. I mean, we know that in Bauman, like, kind of more what you described, you were probably running lower mileage, but then these sessions were just absolutely kind of like pretty like bananas, and you'd probably be feeling them for a couple of days after, and then you made the big switch to Mike, and it's gone really, really well for you. If we did go back a little bit, I think one thing that, I don't know, Mike's when you hear him talk, he's very entertaining and he says a lot of interesting stuff. He does always talk about how kind of controlled your training is, but controlled for you may mean some pretty crazy numbers and stuff. When you made that switch initially and you went into kind of like the 2024 season, did you feel like it was a massive change on your body? Did you feel instantly better? Did you maybe have, were you questioning if it would work coming off kind of like the training that you had done previously at Bowman that you'd had so much success with?
Yeah, dude, totally. I mean, when you switch training in any regard, like there's just a question mark, you know, you don't know if it's going to work or not. And you really don't know if it worked until you race, you know, like you might be slamming certain workouts because they're different, but it's hard to know if it's working until you race. So when I started working with Mike, our first, like, it took us probably 3 months to dial in the training properly, where we were getting consistent efforts in. Like for a threshold day, I've never spent a fall at altitude before that. And I had just moved to Park City. So figuring out my threshold paces, figuring out like how fast I could go, how long of recovery to take, what speeds I wanted the recovery jog, like all those things that I didn't really think about when I was on Bowerman because, you know, our coach just told us. Now I was taking a lot more like of a collaborative role with Mike and sorting that stuff out. So it took quite a while to get consistent results where I knew going into a threshold session, like basically how to execute it and could execute it very consistently at the right lactate levels and the right intensity. And I think the biggest change was just like leaving the group meant leaving 10 training partners and starting to work by myself essentially. And you know, there's great advantages to being in a group, like they're friends, like it's social, they can push you in a workout. The thing that you give up by being in a group is kind of that individual aspect. Like it's much easier for me on my own to run the pace that I need and not get dragged into someone else's pace, especially if it's just a day where I'm not feeling good or a day where I'm feeling great. When you're alone, yeah, you lose, the main things you lose are, yeah, the social element and having people to drag you around, but you gain a lot of freedom individually. And you can, I think, train right at your proper intensity for yourself on that day and not have like these ego moments of someone dropping you or trying to drop someone else or whatever. So I split up with Mike. I was starting to split up workouts into two sessions in a day, which is very in vogue and common now. But I had never done it with Bowerman. So it worked well being on my own. It's like on Bowerman, for example, we would do like 10 by mile or something like that. That'd be our threshold day. But doing that solo just is horrible. It sucks mentally and physically. So splitting it up into two where I'm doing like 5 by mile in the morning and like 8 by 800 in the afternoon just made it mentally a little less fatiguing. But with Mike, it's in general a higher frequency, lower intensity, trying to make stuff repeatable rather than like really big sessions.
Totally.
Do you ever drag anyone out for any of those 115 miles in Flag? Like I know there are just so many people in Flag that I feel like are either available to train with or like, I feel like Flag's very collaborative compared to a lot of running towns. Like, are you getting people out for any of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is up here. Like there's a couple spots where just everyone happens to be at. So yeah. You know, if you go to Lake Mary to mailboxes, you're going to have 20 people to run with. If it snows up here and you go to Winona, same thing. So got a lot of people out here to easy run with. The person I've been with most has probably been Mohamed, just because he's an old friend, an old teammate, and he's been out here for a while. While I was sick, I was very antisocial because I didn't want to run with anyone and didn't want to make anyone sick. But now that I feel normal again, yeah, it's good to have people to share those miles with because otherwise I'm just solo all the time. One of my training partners, Sam Gilman, has been up here a lot. So I was running with him a ton, working out with him a ton. So yeah, that's good. It's like, as an athlete, I feel like your social time is the easy run because you can actually talk. You're really not that social on an actual workout day. So I don't mind the lack of socialness
sometimes. Those days.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
At least for me, like I, maybe you guys are chilling in the workouts and can chat it up, but I'm too tired.
No, that's actually what I always did say that. I was like, if you're going to pick a day to do solo.
Definitely.
Workouts, I mean, obviously, yeah. You talk about the really hard workouts, then you do want to get some help on it. But from a more just like social vibe standpoint, it's like the workout days you can get up for. It's those easy run days where like if you don't have a run scheduled at 9 with someone and you're just like chilling in the morning, then that's when you can be like, yeah, maybe I'll just go a bit later. And then you just start dreading it. And then it's like the worst. Longest 60 minutes of your life or whatever. So that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to your point, like Flagstaff is a good spot to be kind of a semi-independent runner because there's just so many people up here to link up with.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Boulder's not bad. You know, we us semi-independent runners, you know, we have
tell us more.
We have groups. I have training partners.
Yeah. The semi-independent boys.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It just takes effort. That's the thing. That's the difference with a team. With a team, it's like someone else is telling you to like, okay, we're all running this time. When you're semi-independent, I'm going to start using that. You have to actually text someone and be like, hey, you want to run tomorrow? And sometimes, you know, you're just a bit too lazy to do that.
See, that's yeah. I feel like what happens in somehow in Flag, it happens without, well, actually, maybe not.
Because of Haas, maybe. Haas is like got his team there and then everyone that's related to him. Mm. Or everyone just knows the spots and the times.
The network is just way more connected.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. There's limited spots sometimes, especially in the winter. I bet in the spring and summer when things have melted off, it's a little better. But when it starts to snow, a bunch of the stuff that's covered in trees just never melts. So your spots become like limited decently quickly. And same with track access. Like, a lot of times people go down to Cottonwood or Sedona to work out and there's certain hours that you can get on. So you show up there and there's 30 other pros. So you kind of get like potential crossover or like just when you have, I mean, I don't know how many pros are up here right now. I mean, through the winter, sometimes there's like 50 pros. So if there's only 3 spots to easy run, you're going to see quite a few people every day without really trying, you know?
Yeah. Do you for your sessions, you mentioned getting on the road a lot now, do you still use the treadmill for sessions or you try to avoid that if possible?
I'll still use the treadmill. Oftentimes for like an afternoon threshold, I'll use the treadmill where I'm targeting like a lower effort. My main longer sessions, I'll try to be on the roads just to get that feel and get used to it. But a lot of times in the afternoon, like especially being semi-independent, it's nice just to get on the treadmill and like click your headphones on and just, you know, get it over with. Running outside is objectively harder than the treadmill. And sometimes it's nice just mentally to hop on the treadmill and, you know, press start.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Get a little ego boost from the.
Yeah, I just say I'm the opposite. The treadmill is there's a lot of people out there who, yeah, the treadmill is like an ego boost. Like you guys probably follow Jimmy Whelan on Instagram. Do you? The cyclist? I don't know if you know. He's an Australian guy.
I've seen some clips.
Grant, who was a pro cyclist and now he's transitioned to running and he already ran like I think it was pretty much a 61 flat half. So he's pretty good, but he just does the craziest treadmill workouts. Like I look at his treadmill workouts and I'm just like, I couldn't physically do that on ground, like on a track, like with bicarb and tape it and stuff. So it is... it is like for some people, whereas I'm the opposite. I have to run slow. I did a treadmill workout where I was on my last rep and I was using heart rate and I just kept going slower and my heart rate kept going up and I kept going slower and it was the most demoralizing thing ever. But enough about me, back to you, Grant. One thing that was cool, because you know, I've done some road running in my time as well, is, you know, when you come from such a track background, like you mentioned 430 mile pace, you've probably run so many 430 miles in your life on a track. And at some point they become, I guess you wouldn't use the word easy maybe to describe them, but you know what that rhythm feels like and it feels comfortable. Maybe is a better word. Whereas I think on the road, for me at first, 430 mile pace was like, oh, I'm like sprinting right now. Is that how it felt for you at first, or did you have a pretty smooth transition to those kind of more race specific paces on the road?
I think like, in general, I've found that roads are harder than the track. You know, you on a track, you have a flat surface with consistent turns and, you know, a surface that's kind of optimized for running. Like that's what a track surface is made for. The roads aren't necessarily optimized for running response. So, you know, you get ups and downs, like even the road, like very rare to find a perfectly flat road where there's no lumps in it, you know. On the track, you just never have to think about that. So I think it slows you down just a little bit. And yeah, dude, I agree with you. I did one of my first threshold sessions of this build. I was trying to run like 4:45 pace, and it was hard on the roads. It was too hard. So I slowed down a little bit. You know, I could do that on a track all day long. So I'm hoping the more I do it, the more used to it I get, and the more it just feels the same as the track. But I think there's just more variables on the roads that just feels different. You know, the roads could be easier if you get like a slight downhill the whole time or like a tailwind. But most every course out there, you have to face the wind at some point. You have to come up the hills at some point. So yeah, I think the road, like if you imagine just a flat course with track surface instead of road surface, I think that would feel way easier just because it'd be, you know, rubbery and springy and perfect footing, you know? So yeah, I'd say roads are a little tougher.
Makes sense. Did you, I know we're jumping around a bit here, but did you learn anything from your exposure, your proximity to all the BYU crazy roadrunner guys? Being in Utah, I'm sure maybe you witness first person, or you at least hear about, you probably know very well how those guys are training. I mean, they're very open with like essentially how they operate. Is there anything from them that you took into account? I mean, with the caveat that it seems like a lot of your training is potentially more controlled than some of the stuff that they do.
Yeah, you know, that group down in Provo is, yeah, the one of the best marathon groups in the country right now. It has been for a while. Their training is slightly different than mine because they go on a 6-day schedule and then take the 7th day off Sunday. So they pack in a ton of mileage and intensity into 6 days. I went on a long run with them several months ago and was kind of watching how they take bottles and gels and stuff. That's something I've never taken fuel during a race just because my races are usually too short. And I tried doing bottles on that run and gels, and I was like choking on the bottles, even running like 5:45 pace. It was really hard. And Connor and Clayton were just, you know, downing a bottle in like 30 seconds. It was crazy. So like watching how they do it and watching like, I don't know, their like drinking technique was kind of eye-opening. Now, I don't know if I'm going to do bottles in the half. I might just do gels just to simplify things for myself. But those guys train hard. They do it frequently and they live like a perfect running lifestyle, you know. They get up and train, and you know, there's no funny business, there's no going out to the bars, it's training and family. And you know, that's really effective. And yeah, the BYU pipeline, man, to the roads is crazy. But
yeah, they're doing pretty well right now.
Yeah, good guys to learn from, kind of get good ideas from them about like different road type sessions, different like fueling strategies, and the amount of volume that they can handle in 6 days is kind of crazy.
Yeah,
it's scary. Really is.
So assuming you're going back to the track in the spring/summer, which I am assuming you are.
Yeah.
How do you think this build up to the half will compare with the build up to early Grand Slam last year? And do you have do you think that's going to make for a more effective summer?
I hope so. Yeah, me doing this half marathon, this is probably my only road race of the year. I'll go back to the track all spring and summer, kind of do a traditional outdoor track season. You know, the last year I was just kind of on all year. Like that first Grand Slam race was, I think, April 2nd or something like that.
Really?
So to prepare for that, you kind of had to be going pretty hard in March. And I'd done a really aggressive indoor season in February. So I didn't really take any downtime, which I normally do. Like normally in March, April, I kind of go back to fall training and then hit outdoor season and extend it out as long as I can. But last year, I was just kind of always running hot, running hard, like doing race-specific sessions. I think it just kind of cooked me by the end of the year. So I'm hoping that this year, I kind of mentioned that the half marathon training is kind of like fall training anyway. So I'm hoping I can do this half, take the second part of March down and maybe part of April, and then do like a traditional build to the outdoor season and open up around June-ish and not feel cooked by the time September comes around. So I'm definitely not abandoning the track. Even if this half marathon were to go really well, I would still want to run an outdoor track season this year. And if it goes horribly, then I've got outdoor track still to do. So it's kind of a low pressure feeling that I have where this fits in quite well to my overall track plan. And it's just like a first step into the roads. Like most of the time when people step onto the roads, the first one takes a few goes to get it right. I'm hoping that I can get it right the first time, but there's no guarantees to it. And, I feel like all three of you guys have more road experience than I do, from racing various spots, even road miles and stuff. So this is new for me.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And I think it will. I reckon it will translate into a very good build into the track season, especially compared to, what you had to, the challenges that you had to face last year for being ready for early Grand Slam and then everything else that did come. This year isn't a traditional year. Well, it hasn't got a major championship. So what are your goals for this upcoming outdoor track season? How are you kind of going about planning that?
Yeah, so goal number one is this half marathon, just being as prepared as I can and hopefully be in that front pack as long as I can. And if I'm still around with a mile or two to go, then go for the win. Now, there's some really good people in this race, so that's going to be a battle for sure. But that's my goal going into it. And then for outdoor track season, without a major global track championship, kind of want to hit some new Diamond League races that I haven't done before. Maybe chase a 5K time earlier on in the Diamond League season. And then as the year goes on, try to get in more championship style fitness and get ready for Diamond League final, World Ultimate Champs, and hope that I'm feeling good at that point. I'd love to hear you guys' take on what you're prioritizing, because every pro that I've talked to has had different opinions on, when to peak this summer, whether they're prioritizing World Ultimate Champs or not, or if they're just going hard on the Diamond League circuit or trying new events or what. I'd like to still run 5Ks this outdoor season. I feel like I left a little bit to be desired last year on the track in the 5K. So would love to go after the American record outdoors, try to run really fast and try to place high at Diamond League final and get to World Ultimate Champs. But how are you guys prioritizing the year?
You need that elusive Diamond League win. How do you know? How many seconds?
I've been second like five times.
I think it'll happen.
The trouble is I've been second and I was second this year to Isaac Comelli, and everyone was like, who the hell is Isaac Comelli? And then he had a
great
race.
Super at Worlds.
And then, a week later I get second to Jimmy and it's like, who the hell is Jimmy? And obviously he goes on and wins World. So, sometimes people are hot, man. And I like that I'm consistent, but man, it's hard to get a win in those races.
No, it definitely is. I guess we have Comm Games, so slightly different for us, whereas that's going to be, I think, a pretty big focus for anyone in the Commonwealth. Assume maybe it's going to be the last one. No, who knows?
It's probably. Already,
I feel like there's a good chance that, I don't know about a good chance. It already has quite a few less events than a traditional Comm Games, so. We don't really know what the future of the Comm Games is, so maybe make the most of it while we can. But I'm definitely looking at maybe more Diamond Leagues than I have in the past few years. Just feels like the opportunity is there to do a few more and have a crack at a couple of fast times
without having to worry about a late season peak as much.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, Wog?
I reckon that like for you kind of already mentioned this in your answer, but I think the three of us will feel very similar on this, that there's always, when there is a major championships, there's so much pressure around how you know, plan out your season to get in certain races and certain training in order to peak correctly for that. Whereas something that every pro runner will talk about that's based in not Europe, so Australia or America for us, is how fun like just the European racing season is, just being fit and being able to travel to races, whether they're diamond leagues or even not diamond leagues, like, you know, week after week or every second week. So I think even beyond like the Comp Games, yeah, like it's a big goal for all of us. We want to qualify and we want to go and do well there. But I think just being able to have that freedom to just be like, I'm going to try to get fit and then I'm going to try to go and do as many great races as I can. That's something that really excites me. And especially, yeah, without having the pressure of like, there's this one really big thing that like clearly is like by far the most important thing.
Do you know what something I really agreed with? I think it was a Graham Blanks quote saying...
he's got some great quotes, that guy.
He was like, there's no such thing as off years in running or something. I feel like that was like a...
He said that, yeah.
I mean, I think he did. And I think people used to talk about off years a lot, but I'm in full agreement with him. Like, a running career is too short to consider like off years. And I've had too many years being injured that like... Every year you just gotta, I feel like you gotta take the opportunities and I don't know. I like that idea of there's no off years.
Well, I reckon COVID really showed that, because especially I think like a lot of people took COVID as like, all right, well, now we have to do nothing. Whereas for example, you guys over at Bowman, you guys took it as like, we're going to get really, really fucking fit and run really quick. And everyone's like, oh, we could have been doing that this whole time. Yeah, that's like makes way more sense to go out and do. So, I think the moment, the kind of trajectory of the sport, I think maybe those off years when it's like, it felt like the sport was kind of like a bit stagnant's not the right word, but it was like the same every year. Whereas now the graph of the sport is just up, up and up and up and up. And so it's like, you have to hop onto that and you have to get momentum and you have to keep improving all the time if you want to be able to be competitive. So yeah, you can't really take, I guess you can say people can take downtime, especially like people take time off and then they come back even stronger than before. But no, I definitely get what you're saying, especially after all the injuries. I think all of you are probably the same. We're just going to go try race a bunch in Europe.
Yeah. Well, I think for that, like, I think it's a good year for risks. Personally, like, it's a good time to try new things, new training, new races.
Stable?
Not on your life.
New events.
Not on your life. But yeah, I think that, like, I mean, the half marathon, for example, like that, I think is a really cool thing that you're doing, and being able to push yourself and put yourself in a position where you can learn a bit about yourself as an athlete is always something fun, because you're such a consistent athlete as well as one that's very experienced, and putting yourself in a position like that just shows that you're willing to still grow. And I think leading into 27 and 28, it's a good year to have that kind of momentum. So for me, you know, hopefully running a couple of 5Ks and Comp Games. I mean, the elusive Diamond League win will come. Grant, you just got to be in a race where everyone falls over and then you get to the front and then you hold on for dear life, which is what happened to me. But, you know, those things will come, and those races are really exciting. So hopefully, a couple of Diamond Leagues, a couple of races. I mean, if the half marathon goes pretty well for you, would you consider doing the World Championships, the World Road Championships? I think they're in Copenhagen. That would be a cool race. Do they have a half?
They have a half.
Yeah,
that half is the main one there.
I think it's a 5K. Yeah, they have a 5K there too. Like, if you get an itch for it, would you consider that? I think it's pretty late in the calendar, but that'd be a pretty cool event, I think. As a World Championship, it's something that would hopefully keep building over the years.
Yeah, I mean, to summarize a lot of you guys' points here, like, it's an off year in a sense that there's no outdoor track championship, but there's still, this year there was already World Cross, there's World Indoors, and there's World Road Championships. Mm. So, you know, there's it's an off year in the sense of the outdoor track, but there's still World Championships in every other discipline, you know? And I agree with you, Ollie, like, I think it's a year that people are trying to take risks in changing training or changing racing, but it's all like with the mindset of advancing yourself, like not wasting the year, like taking advantage of the slightly less pressure of no outdoor track championship and trying something new. I think like, well, none of us have really experienced a true off year, right? Because I guess if you don't count 2020, like the COVID no Olympics year, all four of us, like, I think we've always been, you know, full throttle trying to maximize. And, you know, Jordy, you mentioned this, like, you don't know how long your career is going to go. Like, this could be one of, you know, 10 years down the line. Like, you could have a crazy career like Bernard Lagat, where you're going until you're 40, but you have no guarantee of when the curtains are going to close. So even though there is an off year, I think everyone's attitude now is to maximize it. And because the conditions are a little different where there's no outdoor track championship, people are like, all right, you know, let's make the most of it regardless. And I think, Morgan, you mentioned this, but you talked to pros from 10 years ago and they talk about off years as like, they didn't do anything. Like, they just hung out and had some fun and relaxed and they hardly trained and maybe went on the circuit, but there was no pressure. But I agree with what Graham said. You know, people are full throttle now. And, you know, you can make, I think one thing I benefited from in the COVID year of 2020 was I was able to train really, really hard. Those were the days of those Bowerman time trials. And I leveled up a ton in that year, just, you know, given it, where, you know, we could have relaxed and said it's an off year. And I think my 2021 was way better because in 2020, in that, you know, off year, we went pretty hard. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see this year. Like, Ollie, that'll be fun to see you in some more 5Ks. Like, it'll be fun for me to try a half marathon. And it's just like, you know, uncharted territory. I think regardless of how it goes, like, that 5K strength will benefit your 1500. And for me, like, no matter what, this half marathon build will benefit my 5K and 10K. And down the line, like, you know, maybe I'll transition to the roads, but I think this will be like very much worth it.
Yeah. So it's succinct. It's like this guy went to like a smarter school than us or something. Just summarize.
Well, definitely smarter
points.
Than Jordy, but
no, they call Wisconsin the Stanford of the Midwest.
And they call NAU the Stanford of Flagstaff.
No, Arizona, sorry.
Oh, Arizona, yeah. Hey, look where Grant is now. Yeah, good point. Good point.
It all comes full circle. Well, totally agree with you on those points. And you gave a cheeky little mention there, the potential some road transitioning, which, considering that the next Olympics is taking place in LA, be a lovely place. I mean, it'd be a lovely place for an American to do any event, but arguably the most iconic event of the Olympics is the marathon. And yeah, I think not only will doing a half marathon now help your racing this year in the track season, but it definitely will help any transition to the marathon that you would hope to make in the next few years. So it's going to be no pressure on it, but it's going to be very exciting to see how that goes. I mean, the U.S. marathon, I mean, people have ragged on the U.S. marathon, like, quality maybe in the past 10 years or so or whatever, even though there's been a lot of amazing marathoners, or maybe more the depth of U.S. marathoning right now, in particular with people that are like young, like younger than us, which is kind of scary, is very impressive. Did you guys see the result of the 207?
Yeah.
From,
yeah.
So very excited to watch that space. Yeah. And you're going to have I mean, I know that you know this already, but you're going to, if you want to run in that marathon in the USA singlet in 2028, it's going to be very competitive. And now is a great time for you to start that journey. So,
very totally, man. I mean, the game only gets harder. You guys know that. Like, yeah, every year it gets harder. So there's more depth, there's more youth, like, more people training seriously at younger ages. And yeah, you got to stay on it and make sure that you're, you know, not overdoing it, obviously, but, you know, kind of riding that line. And for me, like, yeah, absorbing as much data as I can to know how hard I'm going and make sure that I'm not making mistakes really is helpful. That's where, you know, wearables have helped a lot. That's where, like, people are taking I feel like more supplements than in the past with bicarb. Nomio is very hot right now. You know, taking fuel during races, that wasn't really a thing 20 years ago. People are like really maximizing what they have. And, you know, all four of us, like, we've got one body to work with here. Like, so got to stay healthy. Like, you got to make sure that you're working hard enough to adapt and be competitive always, but not so hard that you're, you know, broken. So, I mean, that's kind of the name of the game, staying healthy, working hard. And, yeah, lots of fun stuff ahead, I feel like, for everybody. I feel like, it's fun talking to you guys because we're kind of all the same era where we all graduated college before COVID.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like there was a big shift in the COVID era and now post COVID of kids coming out and just like gunslinging.
There's no rules
anymore. So many more kids. Yeah.
People don't wait to get good. They just get good.
Yeah, dude, exactly.
Why do we wait so long?
They don't go to colleges have to be defunct. It's like, like, what's the point? Everyone's becomes a pro at 18 now. That's going to be the future.
Yeah.
But it's been so, so lovely to finally have you on the show, Grant. I mean, we've obviously talked about you a lot on the show because of who you are. And we had a fun little recurring segment of a couple of years ago called Grant's Girls, which you may or may not be aware of. You're actually on one of our, well, maybe we have to pay you royalties for this, but on one of our shirts, there's actually like a little Easter egg for that. You probably don't know about this, but there's like a, there's like a rose and then it says GG above it, which is stands for Grant's Girls.
I did not know that.
Pants. But to close out today, we do have a couple of fan questions, if that's all right with you.
Let's do it, yeah.
Fire them up.
Are these from Gus or these are from actual fans?
Are they from actual fans? Yeah.
Gus is a fan, though.
All right, Gus is an actual fan.
Yeah, Gus is a big fan. Is they related to Grant's Girls? Or what's the connection?
Oops. Oops. Currently not working.
Technical difficulties.
Give me 1 second.
Yeah.
That's
get it to come through the audio.
Maybe we can just filibuster here. Talk about how... wait 1 sec. Here we go.
Hi, Grant. So it's only right since you're on the Coffee Club pod that you should explain what is a cafecito and how do you make it?
What is that?
Wow, great question.
Do you recognize right. that voice potentially? When I share,
I do recognize that voice. Here, let me get some.
All right, so, oh, we get a little show and tell.
This is amazing. Yes.
All right, show and tell.
Okay.
All right, so a cafecito is really the only coffee I'll ever drink, and you make it with a mocha pot. So have you ever seen these things before?
Beautiful.
You put coffee
nice
grounds
baby,
inside.
Nice baby blue.
Yeah, I got this for Christmas actually. My other one's just silver. You put water in the bottom. You put some coffee grounds in the middle, and then when you put this on the stove, the water like pushes up through the coffee grounds and then comes out the spout. And it's kind of a very easy, non-exact way to make it. You're kind of using espresso grounds, so it kind of becomes like somewhere between coffee and espresso. But to make it a cafecito, you take out the first little drops that come out and you mix it with brown sugar and you like whip it up.
I have seen this video.
Like an artificial, like, you know, when you pull an espresso shot, you get like that cream stuff on top.
Yeah.
You're kind of like making a fake version of that. And then you pour the rest of the coffee in. So it's like a very sugary coffee that's somewhere between like coffee and espresso.
Ooh.
But that's the only stuff I like because it's just like sugar and coffee.
That sounds
yum. Sugar, caffeine.
We get a try.
Sugar and caffeine.
I have
no milk or anything. It's really good. And I usually use like, here, I'll get some more show and tell.
I've seen videos of like, the time I've seen this, it's like an Italian nonna.
It's funny because I've tried to actually do this and I've never done it well before because you really have to like whip it.
There's a method to do it, yeah. Like she was going ham in this video.
Yeah, you got to work the wrist, man.
You get it to fall.
Dude, all right, this is the jet fuel right here.
Cafe Gus.
I've seen that before.
Cafe Bustelo.
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 There's another brand I'll use sometimes called La Llave. They're kind of like Cuban style coffee type stuff. I think sometimes people call a cafecito like Cafe Cubano. It's good stuff, man. You can make it in like 3 minutes and you don't need fancy stuff. I'm sure. So Sam Gilman, I've been living with up here a bunch, and he has he's a much more sophisticated coffee guy.
He has the, he DM'd me about that machine that he just recently got. He got the G7.
Dude, he has a suitcase for it. Yeah. There's like a custom suitcase.
You get a custom suitcase for it. Well, so I have the La Mazzocca Linea Mini, which is like when you go to a coffee shop and they have the big La Mazzocca, it's just a mini version of that.
Yeah.
Sam, we talked about coffee when we were in China for indoor, and shout out to Sam Gilman because he's a big fan of the podcast and a legend. And he's super into coffee. He sent me a DM of the machine and it's absolutely stunning. It's like the manual.
What brand is it?
It's a La Mazzocca. It's the G7. It's like the more expensive version of my
one. Silver one.
The better one. It's wow. Like Liss. Looks like it's Liss made for taking photos of and more. It's like an industrial version looking. Coffee. It's like for making the best espresso you
good
can possibly
make.
Good
for him. Make,
yeah.
Respect.
Yeah, he's got like a legitimate like mini coffee shop in his house. it's legit.
Yeah, we gotta go.
I think he frowns upon my
Cafe Bustelo?
I gave him some and I think he hated it.
He had to say that. He couldn't, considering how much money he spent on making coffee compared to how much you spent, he had to hate
out
it.
Out of principle.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the mocha pot, man, it's consistent, it's easy. Like,
yeah, it's good to travel with too.
We use mocha pots here when we travel. Like they're the easiest.
It's what we took to Phoenix.
Yeah, we used that in Phoenix.
Consistent. But yeah, we do have one more question. For anyone who didn't know, that question was from the Grant's girl, Grant's fiance. So thank you so much, Sarah, for sending that in.
Congrats for wrapping that segment up by actually getting engaged.
Yeah, we didn't report on that. Maybe we did. We probably mentioned it.
I think
that
we did mention it.
There couldn't have been a better ending to that segment than
the big reveal.
I mean, it had nothing to do with it as well. So it was great.
Nothing. One more question.
Okay, so it's Salt Lake 2034 Winter Olympics. What winter sport would you be doing? You can't say cross-country skiing. And what sport would I be doing?
Okay, for context, that's my fiance's voice. And she says, what am I doing? What I would be best at would be cross country skiing. And that's what I would prefer to do. And I'm also going to disqualify biathlon because that's like mostly cross country skiing. That's one where you ski and then shoot the gun. So if I can't do those, probably long track speed skating.
Great answer.
I think the longest event they do is 10K. They roughly go twice as fast as runners. So I think that race usually takes about 15 minutes, maybe a little quicker, but that's probably my best shot. Cause it's like probably the most endurance related competition in the Winter Olympics besides cross country skiing. So I'm going long track speed skating 10K. I will be 37 at that point. When the games are in Salt Lake, so
peak age, I would say.
Hey, the mass, the long, I don't know if it's called long track, the mass start one was just won by a 40-year-old from the Netherlands.
Really?
Yeah.
Speed skating.
Yeah. Wow. And it was actually a crazy race where he almost lapped the whole field because they were so scared about someone else's kick, and so he made an early break, and then he just like got to chill and just
hanged on. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very cool to watch.
Mm.
Yeah, I think. I'm going to go long track speed skating. For Sarah, I'm going to say, I guess she'll also be about the same age. I'll give her either short track speed skating. I think they do 1500 there. Sarah ran the 800 in college, so I'll give her 1500 short track or figure skating because she used to figure skate.
Oh, wow. Epic. Can I just say a little, like, this is such an aside, a little gripe that I have with the Winter Olympics. And it's actually related to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where we said Australia's won its most medals ever. I think every country has said that they've won their most medals ever. So I'm just convinced that they just add more events to the Olympics. And so every country is always saying that they've won the most medals ever. Is that not fair?
I think that could be fair, but I also do believe that globalization is actually like a thing, and like a lot of people are now getting more access to these facilities to be able to do things. Like to see Jamaica had their first bobsled team back since the 90s.
Since the movie, right?
Since the movie.
That's cool.
Their start, I don't know if you guys watched it. I was like super into the Winter Olympics. Their start was faster than anybody else. They were still the fastest, but they just couldn't like... They were just getting better, but they just weren't good enough.
It was actual track runners.
Yeah. Well, On Athlete, she does the Winter Olympics and the Summer Olympics. The German sprinter. The name's eluding me. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I think I do, but I can't remember.
She competed at the Winter Olympics. I think she medaled in the two-woman bobsled. I think it's just like globalization, but maybe they're putting in more events. The curling was on. Like the entire time, it was all curling.
But the curling is the same event on every day, so it's kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
They had some runners in the Skimo. That was like a new event.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw that one. But yeah, Winter Olympics. I mean, I don't like just put cross country in there. Come on, just make that happen. And then we can.
Well, there is talk about in 2034, the Utah Organizing Committee is talking about adding cross country running.
Yeah. Which would be sick.
At the moment,
roughly in the same spot. Like, the cross-country ski course is in a place called Soldier Hollow, which is kind of by Park City. It's in Midway, which is maybe 25 minutes away. And there's talks right now about adding cross-country running. It wouldn't be that hard. I feel like they could basically just put it on the same course after all the skiers are done.
Snow.
Chuck it on there. Chuck in the, cyclocross as well. I think that's what they're... Yeah. Why not?
It'd be fun. Cyclocross.
I mean, it'd be fun. I don't know how it'd hold up at 37 on like the ice and snow, but it'd be fun.
Yeah, and you just have long spikes.
I believe it.
Hey, age is just a number.
Totally. Well, Grant, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been absolutely amazing having you on here. Thank you to Amazfit for kind of setting this up and for supporting the both of us. We really appreciate it. And we're very excited to talk more about Amazfit and all its great features in the coming weeks. But yeah, Grant, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks guys. Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah, all the best in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, best of luck, man.
Half marathon time. Everyone should tune in. It's actually going to be a sick race.
He's also part of Coffee Club Track Club now, so we can claim him. Gus has claimed him in the roster.
Dude, that's
so
big for our
team.
There's his big pickup. Yeah.
I thought Morgan and I were semi-independent TC now.
Yeah. We can start. You can be part of multiple teams.
It's a shadow organization. Yeah, it's anybody that has agreed to be on the Coffee Club podcast.
I like that. I'm going to start.
Semi-independent Coffee Club TC.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you, Grant. See you.
Thank you, Grant.
All right. See you guys.